obviously let us just start off by saying pleased I am to be at the Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia and Washington State, so I'm looking forward to it, and we may get problems with the internet, it may drop in and out, but if it goes, is that okay?
We have two more backup computers if necessary.
We are having problems with the internet.
Yes, so
okay.
What I'll do, people are out getting coffee and tea right now, I'll corral them in so we can start. Hold on, please.
Okay, that's fine.
Hello, everyone. We now have Simon Parks on Skype live from England. So please take your seats. This should be a really incredible out of this world interview. I'm so happy to. I got to wait for my. Ryan, are we filming?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. I would like to welcome Simon Parks by Skype from England to the Galactic Wisdom Conference. He's an incredibly interesting man. Everyone's clapping here in the audience for you, Simon. They're all waving at you. So even though you can't see them, they're all here, believe me. So anyway, let me take my microphone. Simon, for those of you, in the audience who don't know about your background, could you please tell a little bit about your fascinating background, your intelligence services, how your parents... a little bit about how you got to be where you are today.
I'm having problems with the internet.
That's good.
Okay, can you hear now?
We are having a few problems with the internet, I think. It's just the sound is dropping out.
Okay, well, we can hear you fine from our end.
Okay, well, that's what matters.
Yeah, we'll do the best we can, Simon.
That's fine. Okay.
Anyway, if you could tell us, my audience here, a little bit about how you ended up doing what you're doing now, and a little bit about your family.
The internet's really bad. It's just dropped out of me.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about your family? Can you hear me now?
Hello.
Just dial them up again, Teddy. That's all you can do.
A land cable would be good, but I don't have one. Does anybody here have a direct cable?
Let's try one on your old one. And we can turn it off later.
Hello, Ted. We're back on, I think.
Okay. As I understand Skype, they use a particular bandwidth, and so I've switched off the video. And on my side, I've switched off the video. This is much better. So we can see you. I don't have to be seen because all my audience here sees me. So I hope this works. Can you hear me okay now? Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, still keep dropping in and out, Ted. But when it is working properly, I can hear you very clearly.
Okay, good.
But we'll give it a try.
Okay.
I did hear you.
Okay.
I did hear your question.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful. If you could explain a little bit about your background and how you ended up doing what you do today would be wonderful, especially your extraterrestrial contacts and family background.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you, Ted, for inviting me to the Galactic Wisdom Conference, Olympia, Washington. Thank you to all the audience. It's a very warm welcome you've given me, and I appreciate that. So thank you. If at any time, Ted, you can't hear me, and I have to, just let me know.
We're good.
Okay,
it's fantastic.
Take it away.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay. Right. Well, to understand me, you'd have to understand the family background. My mother worked for British intelligence, and locally that's called MI5. But in reality, she was working for the National Security Agency. My grandfather worked for MI6, which is the British Intelligence Foreign Arm, but he was really working for the CIA. So, although both my grandfather and my mother were, in the obvious sense, working for the British, it was being shared exclusively with the Americans. My mother's job was to type out documents that had arrived from scientists who were under the Operation Paperclip program from the Americans. And any crashed extraterrestrial vehicles, any alien spacecraft that had crashed on the planet and the Americans had retrieved, these would be sent either to the German scientists that were based in America or this group who were based in the British and American part of Berlin. And these documents would arrive. They would be between maybe only 5 pages thick or 25 pages thick. They'd be in German. And they would have the words secret or top secret or very top secret and occasionally what's called the purple group in purple writing, extremely top secret. Now, they were all in German. And this guy from... It was definitely MI5. He wasn't the National Security Agency. MI5 would arrive with a document. And then my mother had to sign for it. Would countersign. And there was a ribbon around. You had to cut the ribbon. And he gave her a spool of tape where he had translated the German into English. And then her job was to literally type out his translation onto the paper. Now, this started in about 1965. And continued right through to 1979 when my mother died. I believe she was murdered. And during the time that I was a schoolboy, then Monday to Friday, obviously I was at school, but Saturday and Sunday, my mother worked at home. She would go to lunch and leave the document out on the desk. So I would read for about 4 or 5 years during that period all of the documents that were left out. Now, at the time, I just accepted it, Ted, but now I know that this was deliberate. They were deliberately putting me in a position to be able to have access to this. This guy's name was Paul. That was the guy who would bring the secret documents, Paul Dunlop. And he said, that's not my real name. He said, I have a racing car, and I've taken my name off the tyre. So he was very upfront that he wasn't going to give us his real name. And he would arrive sometimes in the morning or the evening, and my mother would go and make coffee, and then he would sit and talk to me. And he was an ex-RAF fighter pilot, and we would talk about UFOs and aliens. And at no point was I asked to leave the room. Now, that's incredible. Looking back on it now, I would be somewhere between the ages of 7 and 12 during that period. And there was no discussions held outside of my earshot. The only time I was told to leave the room was when my mum signed the Official Secrets Act. So I was privy to documents that dealt with energy beam weapons, to the type of nuclear reactors that powered alien spacecraft, to the nuclear tunneling boring machines that are used in all the deep underground facilities in America and elsewhere, mind control issues, documents about Adolf Hitler, the last few days of the Third Reich, a whole range of material. Now, these documents never said where the spacecraft had crashed. It never said how they were brought down. The remit was always the same, which was, we have this information, we have these bits of technology, we want to know what you can do with them. And the group of scientists would come back and say, well, we can't do that, but we can maybe do this. And all these documents were literally from military to scientists, how we can back engineer and make something from this. So during the 1970s, the great push was for microcircuitry. The principle of energy beam weapons was well understood, but the software and the miniaturization of circuits were not yet at the position where they could actively target alien spacecraft. And when Ronald Reagan came forward with Star Wars, it was simply because they were in a position with the software and the microcircuitry to start doing that. They'd had the delivery systems, missiles, a good 10 years prior to that. So very interesting upbringing, and all the time I was having alien encounters, but not with fifth dimensional beings. The beings that I have a great deal of understanding with are the fourth dimension, so Draconis reptilians, what I would call in my country mantid, but you guys would say mantis, some of the feline species, and some of the greys. I really don't like the greys. I have a real problem with the greys. So a huge interaction from probably the age of five ongoing right through to the present time, although it's reduced greatly now. So that's a little bit about my early days. In 2010, I decided I would go public because I felt that, firstly, the story was just too big and had to be shared. And secondly, I just knew that the vast majority of people had been lied to by all these different governments. And so I decided that I would tell my story and see where it went. For the first 2 years, I think every established media organization tried to make me look crazy or detached from reality. And they were having a job because they had this stereotypical image of somebody who has experience with aliens. You know, and I was a driving teacher. I had been elected as a local city councillor after I'd gone public. So that upset the authorities because I had gone on the doorstep to get people's votes, and they were very well aware of who I was, and yet I was still elected. And plus the government had approved me as a driving teacher. So there were issues that the establishment couldn't get their head around. But nevertheless, the attacks still came on. And then, I think in about 2012, I was invited to have a tour of a secret military installation in Britain, which actually is owned by the Americans. It's called RAF, which stands for Royal Air Force, Fylingdales, and it is the only three-phased array in the world. So it is a radar that is digital, but has three plates, three sides to it, and it can look around the world. And there is a two-phased array in North America, but this is the only three-phased. It's incredibly top secret. And I was given a three-hour tour of this base. And I thought it was rather amusing because in the main control room, all the British technicians and military men are sitting at the banks of computers and screens. And to the side is a glass panel with a key lock, so it's a door code, and what I was told are the Americans. And when, they didn't use the word UFO, but when something is detected, all the Brits have to get out of the seats, walk out of the control room, lock the door, the Americans open the door, come out, and take control of the facility. When they've dealt with whatever, that's absolutely God's honest truth. When they have dealt with the alien spacecraft, they've done what they need to do, they go back into the glass door, lock it up, press a button, opens the door, and the Brits come back in again. Now, on all the documentation you read, all you're told is it's a shared facility. But the guys who monitor the radars were quite open and said to me, this is what happens. And also, the information they gave me is very different from the official. The official information is that the radar sees about 2,500 miles out into space. Now, what they told me is it can see to the moon, which is 250,000 miles. And its job is not just for radar, but it takes pictures. Many people don't appreciate that a phased array can take a photograph 200,000 miles out in space, and the quality of that is as good as any digital camera you take at a distance of 30 feet. So what happened when I had that this was that the established media were thrown into complete confusion. on one hand, they were being told by their news editors to try to make me look as if I was completely mad, and yet here is both the American and the British military giving me a tour. So the attitude changed dramatically towards me. And since then, the media has been very cautious of me. Many other things as well, Ted, but I hope that gives a flavour of a little bit about my background.
Well, that's just so incredible, Simon. Thank you so much for sharing that. I want to tell you that I don't think you're crazy. And does anyone think Simon is crazy?
No,
we all think you're quite sane. And we're very happy to have you here today, Simon. So don't worry about the people here thinking you're crazy, because we don't. We don't. Now, you have a very unusual family background. In addition to your mother being in the Secret Service and your dad, I think, as well, being in the Secret Service, your soul is it from other civilizations off from this planet? And if you could tell my audience a little bit about that, would be very interesting.
Your audience are very wise. It is the wisdom conference, so everybody knows that your physical body maintains within it a soul, and you know the Bible is absolutely correct. It contains an energy body, the real you, that never dies. And really and truly, it should only be Source, God, if you want, who has a hand in that. But unfortunately, there are others who have the technology to tinker around and make changes, and have done for a very long time. So the soul that lives inside this physical body of mine is made up of parts. One third is hollow earth human. One third is Draconis reptilian. And one third is mantis. Which means that you'd think that I would have a real problem whether I was making a cup of coffee or walking across the sidewalk, because I wouldn't decide what I was going to do. But it doesn't work like that. Don't think of an energy soul with bits bolted onto it. It is one living entity. It's accepted by each part. The element from that particular star family has agreed to coexist within that physical body. So again, I hope that that's as clear as I can make it.
It's absolutely fascinating. We have, as one of my speakers here, retired Colonel Billy Woodard, whose father Zora lives in the Hollow Earth, and he'll be here in a few hours. Actually, he's traveling here now by car. But it's very interesting gentleman, and probably part of your family lineage. Certainly from the Hollow Earth, probably knows his family background as well. I'm sure it's a small world, or small Hollow Earth, so that they know each other. One of the things I wanted to ask you is, with respect to the reptilians, how do they think? That's one question. Normally, I know a little bit about the reptilians, but not a lot about them, to be honest. How do they think, or what is their attitude toward humans?
Well, there are many sorts of different reptilians. I can only speak for the group that I'm familiar with. I'm familiar with the Draconis reptilians, although there is a native group that lives under the earth and is a native side. There's another group on Sirius and a couple of other groups. But the group that has a base under the Vatican and under Capitol Hill, that is the Draconis reptilian. How do they think? Well, they are very ceremonial, ritual-based. They do have emotions, but their emotions are not activated or valued in the same way as humans. So they tend to be very arrogant. They tend to think that they've reached the top of their evolutionary chain. You see, reptilians, Draconis reptilians, don't like humans because humans perspire. Reptilians don't sweat, so they don't like any mammals because mammals perspire. And also, humans evolve. Whereas reptilians haven't. They've got to the pinnacle of evolution. They don't evolve anymore. So I think that humans are excellent because humans can adapt and change. But the reptilians believe that that's because they haven't reached the height of their own development yet. So the reptilian thinking is one of arrogance. That's the best answer I can give you.
Well, that's really interesting. And the mantis, I don't know much about the mantis species or race. If you could explain a little bit about how they think as well, would be very interesting.
Very different. The mantis, again, I can only speak for the group of mantis that I have connection with. There are many groups of mantis. Some are good, some are bad, and some are indifferent. But the group that I'm familiar with have some spirituality to them. Their role is rather like a referee in a football match. They tend to be called up when different empires or groups are at war with each other, and they need somebody to broker a deal without them losing face. So each universe within the multiverse, within the fourth dimension, has mantis assigned to it, and their job title is Universal Master. Mantids have three hierarchical tiers. The top rank wear the purple robes. They are the Universal Masters. Below them, naked, they don't wear any clothes, are the technicians. They fly the spacecraft, they operate the computers. And the third tier, below them, are the doctors. And if you ever need an operation, you want a mantis to do the operation. They are absolutely phenomenal doctors. In fact, and they were involved in Montauk for a period, as were the feline beings. But we're probably going off track here a bit. So basically, the ones that most people see are the mantis in the purple robes. So again, I hope that helps.
Well, it's very interesting. I've visited James Gillian's ranch here in Washington State, and he talks about the feline beings, of being a part feline or cat and part human. Could you explain a little bit about that to my audience? I'm sure people will ask about them.
Certainly. I'm very happy to do so. There's not a great deal of information out there, because when most people see these beings, a being enters their head and projects a domestic pussycat face. The belief being that most people will freak out if they see an alien, so they will let them see a traditional house cat. This is not accurate. The feline species look just like us, except their ears are set between half an inch and 1 inch higher on their head. That gives you the indication like a cat. The ears are not like a pussycat, but the ears are higher. They wear their hair parted in the middle, and they have the ability to fly. Now, I don't mean that they have wings. They have the ability to use their very advanced technologies to allow them to fly short distances. And in fact, Stuart Swerdlow quite rightly refers to them as the flying lions. So here's the history. The original species came from one of the planets in the Orion group. For reasons that I don't understand, there was a split, and part of the civilization left the Orion, went to a planet in the Sirius system. They evolved a separate culture and took a new name to themselves. Now, the American military can't pronounce the name, so the American military call them the Kilrotti. I'll repeat that. The American military refer to them as the Kilrotti. That's not correct. Their name is the Khetkari. But the American military can't say Khetkari. So the Khetkari are the ones that had a hand in building the Great Pyramids. So that is why on some of the carvings in Egypt, you see these people with cat faces. And an Egyptologist will tell you, well, that's a man with a mask. No, I don't believe it is. I think that the guy or woman who carved those statues or carved those friezes was trying to tell us that these people had come from the stars to help build the pyramid. So it's a feminine culture. It's matriarchal. The queen is the bull. There are two castes, literally, in the feline species that I am familiar with. There's the royal family, and then everybody else. They are between 4 to 6 times stronger than humans. And they stand at about 6 foot to 6 foot 2. So I hope that helps.
Oh, very interesting. Do they purr when they talk?
It is they don't. Oh, I love it, Ted.
When they're happy, they purr.
I've never heard that. They all speak telepathically. They have vocal cords and they have a mouth, and they can make noises through the vocal cords. But when they are working with somebody who is familiar with them, they will just be telepathic. The only time they use vocal cords, if they can use them, is when they are meeting somebody for the first time and they wish to reassure that person, rather than just go straight into the telepathic messaging.
That's fascinating. I have a cat at home, and I always wondered where he came from, and I always think that he's always reading my mind as to what I'm saying. We communicate telepathically quite a bit. I come from a psychic family.
Okay. Not at all surprising, Ed.
So, one of the things people ask me about what's happening now on the planet in terms of ET.
You are breaking up, Ted. I can't hear you.
Okay. People are asking me now what's happening in terms of extraterrestrial contact now on the planet. There's been quite a bit of discussion about, for example, President Eisenhower's secret agreement with the reptilians in 1954 and where that's led us down a path of a lot of wars and secret space program technology. What's happening now? I'm sure you're familiar with that, with that program, of how the U.S. military has been in collaboration with the Draconians and the Greys.
Okay, if I drop out through the Skype, you must try and let me know. I have a different take on the traditional history there.
Okay.
You've got the date of 1954.
Right.
With an agreement with the Greys / reptilians. I don't go with that.
Okay.
My date is 1950.
Okay.
My date is 1950. But what happened in 54 was that the President of the United States called a special meeting because the Greys were reneging on the deal that had been struck in 1950. And the deal was that certain people could be abducted and taken, but a list and names had to be given. And what was happening, the Americans realized, was that far more people were being taken and not returned. So the meeting was called in 1954 to try to hold the aliens to the deal that had been signed, and the aliens refused. So, but you have to understand that at that time, the American government did not have the weapons to fight that alien faction. The energy weapons that the Germans in 1945 had been developing wasn't yet ready. And as a result of that, what the Americans did quite rightly was stall for time. The problem I have is that they should have gone public, because I think that the American people and the people of the world, A, they have a right to know, and B, I think we're all a damn sight stronger, and we could have coped with it. We could have supported our government much more. So since then, there has been deal after deal after deal where basically the birthright of humanity was sold down the river. And that's a combination of some arm of religion and some of the corporations.
Fascinating. Now, this agreement in 1950 is one that I'm not familiar with. Could you explain how it came about, and were other governments involved? For example, was the British government involved in the negotiations in 1950?
No. what had happened, again, I had a slightly different take from many people.
Sure.
My understanding is that the American government, prior to the Second World War, was already aware of alien activity in underground bases in America. The big development here was in 1933, when an alien spacecraft was deliberately crashed into the Black Forest in Germany. And then in 1941, when the same faction crashed a alien spacecraft into mainland America, what happened was that the Nazis, the Germans, decided that they would look at the power plant in terms of making a spacecraft fly. The Americans decided they would look at the power plant in terms of making a bomb. So the reason that the Germans never had the bomb was simply because their research had been about powering a craft. When the Second World War ended, there was a change in government in Great Britain, and the Americans did not like the new government, so did not engage or share information. Now, my grandfather actually met Stalin, who was then president of Russia, and he was asked to find out what the Americans, this will make you laugh, I'm sure. My grandfather met Stalin, and his job was to ask Stalin what the Russians knew about the Americans in terms of alien spacecraft. And Stalin said to my grandfather, give me 5 years and I will have infiltrated the CIA. Basically, he was saying, we don't know, but when we infiltrate the CIA, we'll know everything. Because the Americans were not talking to the British government at that time and were freezing everybody out because of the technology for themselves, which personally I don't have a problem with. I have a problem with a man called Dr. Mengele, who had murdered lots of children in most horrible experiments, who was given American citizenship and became Dr. Green or Dr. Black or Dr. White, and actually was based at the Montauk Project for a while. So what happened was America said, never again will any other country be more powerful than us. We must be the most powerful country in the world, even if that means doing things that go against the Constitution. Now, that was not taken by a president. That was taken by a group of people who ultimately were more powerful than the president. So what countries are involved now? You have a split between India, China and Russia, who have Nordic-type aliens advising them, and you have North America that has reptilian-type entities advising them, and then you have Mossad within Israel that has a completely different alien group advising it. In the Scandinavian countries, they have connection to another group. So don't just think one country has this hotline. There are a number of them, and they are all basically working against each other. So it's a very challenging environment.
That's fascinating. I had no idea the complexities of this situation, Simon. Thank you so much for explaining that. One thing I was going to ask you with respect to...
I've lost you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, you come back. You're just fading in and out.
Okay, good. I may type questions too if we have poor audio. But with respect to the Nordics helping China and India, are they benevolent or are they not benevolent?
Okay, you did cut out, but I think I understood the question. You're asking whether the Nordics are benevolent. I think we have to be very, very careful. My own belief is that anything from the fifth dimension upwards is truly benevolent, because these people have ascended and they have got enlightenment. The fourth dimension is this uneasy house. It's that halfway house. I think the Nordics, I know the Nordics absolutely hate the reptilians, and it's for that reason that they are advising any country who is not part of the Rothschild Bilderberg reptilian group. So whilst I would say to you that the Nordics are beneficial, I think I would always say, always be careful and ultimately only trust your own self.
I see. Interesting. And with respect to the Israelis and Mossad, what is that an ambivalent...
Okay, you are dropping out again, Ted.
Okay, with respect to the Israelis, is that a benevolent group advising them, or is it a reptilian group?
No, it's not. No, it's the Israeli... I have to be so careful here. Mossad isn't the Israeli state. Mossad is not just a military arm, it is a political arm, and has very strong connection to what we call the Kazakhstan Jews, which are based in Ukraine. And that is a group which I don't think is particularly helpful to mankind.
I see. Interesting. And of course, here in North America, we the influence of the reptilians and the Greys is well known here in this country, anyway. Mm. But I've also gotten information recently that their days are numbered and that their influence is actually on the wane here in the United States, which is a good thing. Do you have any information on that, Simon?
Right, you just cut out. Are you asking me if that's accurate?
Yes, just asking about the influence of the reptilians and the Greys here in the United States, that their influence is waning. It's on the decline.
Okay, I think I can get what you're saying. It is reducing. The reason for this is because anyone who's perhaps at the operation of CERN, and, you know, I set a group up which is doing very well called Connecting Consciousness, which doesn't have an office, we don't have a bank manager, we just have ordinary people in many countries of the world who passionately believe in freedom and the right to express yourself without fear of, you know, the system coming down on you. We did a group meditation which had an incredible positive effect on CERN. CERN was trying to open a portal between this dimension and the fourth dimension to bring in reinforcements. So you're absolutely right. It didn't work, by the way. It's well documented that at the time of our meditation, CERN went offline. The numbers of white reptilians, these are the royal, are to be numbered in hand, you know, maybe 25. The number of guards with them, about 200. So if I said to you there were about 200 reptilians left on the planet, in the planet, I think that would be accurate. So they have suffered quite a reduction, but the reduction has been mainly in the Greys. I'm talking not the Greys that the American military manufacture. I'm speaking about the Greys that the Draconis had manufactured, because the American military have their own robotic Greys. So there is a reduction. A number of underground bases are non-operational, but the control is not broken. They're still there. But there is a weakening of power. So yes, I agree with that, Ted.
Wonderful. I have some people here in the audience who've been in direct contact with the Galactic Alliance. And one gentleman's name is Scott Lemriel. He's here in the audience. But Scott has said through his friends with the Galactic Alliance, who, by the way, have staged, I counted last night, 8 or 9 different Galactic Alliance spacecraft orbiting stationary above us, all for protection. And I'm so grateful for their help. Have you had much contact with the Galactics? And
You dropped out, Ted. You dropped out again.
Okay. Have you had much contact with the Galactics?
Well, first of all, there are many councils. For a very, very long time, very few off-planet entities were bothered about this planet. It was the free will question, do we intervene or do we not? And for many thousands of years, individuals have incarnated on this planet because they chose to become involved, because they just couldn't stand the injustice that takes place on this planet. Now, very recently, a great number of higher dimensionals have formed alliances or councils, because the only way to beat the reptilians is to join together. A reptilian is approximately 7 times physically stronger than a male, incredibly psychic, and a reptilian will know what you're thinking before you've even almost thought it yourself. And so in order to beat these creatures, you have to employ a wide range of different skills and different technologies. But at the same time, the human race is the goal here. And because if you just fight a battle and you replace one alien leadership with another, then humanity hasn't evolved. So the whole point must be to bring humanity up. And so the idea of the councils or the federation is to try to put pressure on the governments of the world to be truthful and try and bring the people to a level of understanding. Because if they don't, then ultimately patience will run out and the benevolent aliens will just literally take charge of the situation. So we're not far off that point, actually.
I see. Interesting. What do you see for the future, Simon? Very curious to see, based upon your knowledge and experience.
I'm very, very positive. I am actually very positive in many ways. I've always said that humanity will make it, but I don't know what we'll be in when we come through the other side. All planets evolve. All planets develop and take what they can with them. If you are of a good consciousness, then you will travel with your planet. You will evolve with your planet. If you're not, well then, you know, it's not your time. I don't believe humanity can be stopped. The will to live, the will to create, the will for goodness is so strong in most people that that will force its way through. And no small hand of government has the right to oppress large numbers of people who are being lied to and tricked and cheated. Because, as I've said to off-planet entities many, many times, when I have asked aliens to back off a bit, and I've said, how can you expect a people to make a decision where they don't have all the facts at their fingertips? Until the average person in the street has the knowledge to make a decision, any decision that person makes can't be held valid. So it's about educating people and doing it in a way that has the official backing of a government. And frankly, if these governments don't do what they need to do, they will be removed. And they know that. And they're running out of time.
That's very well said. I want to give a good clap on that. Her name, Susan Miller from New York City, on my radio show about 2.5 years ago now. And she said this decade into the 2020s and 2030s is a time of truth, not only for people on an individual level, but also for governments as well and corporations. And things that are true will become even more self-evident and truer, and those that are false will be revealed to us as false and fall by the wayside.
Oh, you've gone.
Okay. I can type out my question. Can you hear me now, Simon?
Yes. Yeah, I think I probably lost the last quarter of what you were saying.
What I was saying is that things that are false will be revealed as false and fall by the wayside. And I think with, for example, with the secret space program disclosures by Corey Good, for example, Randy Kramer, and Edward Snowden is also playing a big role in this too, of revealing the truth about what's really going on in the world, where the many governments and some entities, they can't hide the truth anymore. It's difficult to hide. We have a lot of people here, and I think I'd like, in justice to my audience, I'm sure someone out there may have a question. Would it be okay if I asked took a couple of questions? It's all right?
I would love to interact with your audience. Yes, please.
Okay. I would like to a real quick question.
Hi, Simon. Can you hear me?
He can't. But I don't know if you can, but go ahead.
I heard.
Okay. Simon, Nature of Reality Radio host Andrew Fisher here. I want to know, is it true that the reason you've been not come on my radio show and act like you didn't know me when I asked you why you didn't show. It's because your malevolent contacts ordered you not to come on my show because
keep it positive.
Hard questions.
Keep it positive.
I didn't hear that. Would you just tell me what he said, please?
I'll repeat it. I have a radio talk show host here, Andrew Fisher from Philadelphia, and he was asking, I think he sent a request to, for you to be on his show, and he was just asking why.
You've cut out again. I can't hear you.
All right. Well, it's all right. I'll he was wondering, he'd like to invite you to his show.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Just send a text and we'll set it up. How do we do that?
That's fine. I did hear you say keep it positive. Did he invite me or something and couldn't get hold of me?
Yeah, that was it. But we'll link up together and we'll set it up.
Well, we could do, but, you know, I'd like to just answer it. I have terrible problems receiving emails. Most of my emails don't get to me. I had to close Facebook down. Skype, if I was talking to my grandmother now and we were talking about the weather, the Skype would be wonderful. The quality would be brilliant. But as soon as I talk about any of this subject or I mention anything, suddenly the quality drops. So if I don't get back to people, it's not because I'm not bothered. It's because I'm not receiving the communications. So I would just ask people to bear that in mind. I'm not a corporation. I'm one guy who's decided to take on the system, to be open and take all the nastiness that the system can throw at me, which means I don't have a great gang of people working for me. I don't have lots of girls and boys all taking messages. I just do it myself with one or two volunteers. So if he has sent something to me and I've not responded, then I do apologize, but it's not to be taken personally. It is simply because of the pressures that I'm under. So I hope that helps.
It helps tremendously because I'm in the same position. I get a lot of emails and sometimes people send me emails. I never get them. Especially from highly spiritual people, they end up sometimes off in the ether. And then they call me later and they say, how come you didn't answer my email from months ago? And I'll say, well, I never got it, so. But I have to tell you.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, you have the same situation I have. But you know, I think the white light's stronger than the dark. Simon?
Yeah, sorry, you dropped out there.
Okay, I think the white light is stronger than the dark.
It has to be, and as long as we believe in that, it will work.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm so grateful that we have such a good connection today, because you're coming through very clear on the audio, and we can see you on the video, too. Go ahead.
Good.
One more question, please.
Could you talk about the Brookhaven Institute, and what's that about?
Okay. Simon, we have a question about the Brookhaven Institute.
Okay, I didn't hear that.
I can type it for you. We have a question about the Brookhaven Institute, and what you might know about that.
Okay. Right. There are a number of organizations which set themselves up as arm's length or agencies which can trace a link in your country to the CIA. The CIA do most of the mind control programs. Many of the word super soldier is a word I don't particularly like, but that's a word that many people understand. In my country, we have an organization called the Tavistock Institute, and this is an organization where I had the privilege of meeting a survivor, somebody in their 60s who came to me had done a wonderful deprogramming work on herself, and she didn't need me to help to deprogram her because she'd done such a good job. But she wanted to tell me in her own words what she'd experienced. Now, all I would say to you is that there are a number of organizations and agencies that are set up for a wide-ranging background. Some are Freemasonry, some are spiritual, some are working for good, some are working for bad. And when you are doing a show like this, it's always very, very difficult to talk about individual organizations because you tend to find a solicitor or a legal person then starts to cause you a lot of aggravation. So that's probably as far as I would go publicly.
That's fine. That's fine, Simon. I was going to ask you too. We have one more question. Go ahead, Ryan.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Simon. This is Orion. What would be one of the most important things for people on this planet to actually help push forward the positive agenda for, you know, the freeing of the spiritual essence of the Earth?
He asked Simon, my friend Orion, who originally contacted you on my behalf, which is thank you, Orion, for setting that up. He asked, what would be the most, what was it again?
The most effective.
I got it.
Yeah.
I got it.
Okay.
The most effective way.
I got it.
Okay, good.
Okay. The fact is that Orion has some telepathic capability, so I was able to pick that up from him. Right. You guys are in the most important country in the world. And I can say that because I'm a Brit. And if I was American and said it, people would say I was just had a big head. America is the most important country in the world because it is where the decision is going to be made. You have a very, very important presidential election in November. You will have a choice between, at the moment, Clinton and Trump, or if they remove Clinton, Joe Biden, Binden, get his name right. So you may not have Clinton, it may be Joe Binden. But ultimately, you have got a very, very important vote. And what I would ask everyone to do is to hold to your truth, because you are going to be assailed by propaganda, fear, lies, which could be anything from trying to force you to have inoculations, force you to be microchipped, and I just need you to resist. Now, I'm not advocating violence. Again, we have to be careful. We don't want the state writing a letter. But what I am saying is that you have freedoms. You have a constitution. You have the ability to make your own decisions. And you have to stay true to that. Now, the other point was about the connection with the planet. Fracking isn't about obtaining oil or gas. Fracking is about weakening the planet's consciousness. In a human body, you have veins and arteries that carry the blood around you. But the planet Earth has underground watercourses that carry the water around, and that water is encoded with messages. The whole point about fracking is to pour chemicals into the underground watercourse to try to dilute the information that is carried by the planet, to try to break the connection between humanity and the very planet itself. So you need to resist environmental destruction, and wherever you get the chance, try and educate people. I don't think you need to ram anything down their throats, but always challenge, always see if you can change someone's point of view, and never ever give in and think that you've lost, because we haven't. So I hope that's a help.
The fracking is an issue here that many people are actually against here in North America, but we don't know the spiritual connection between fracking and the ultimate goal, to sever that connection between human consciousness and the planet. And I want to thank you so much for sharing that, because that's something new that I just learned from you now. And that gives me an added spiritual tool for people to stop it. I think that we have free energy available on this planet, that we've had the technology for a long, long time. But the oil companies and some of the large interests in this, in the United States especially, in Canada, want to keep that free energy secret. So we keep using all these antiquated 18th, 19th century ways of energy production. Every time I see an airplane flying around, I think to myself, how silly it is for them to use jet fuel when they could use free energy. But I think it's available out there, but we have to stand up and make sure that it's
okay, you just dropped out.
We have to stand up and make sure that the free energy sources are available to humanity. Can you hear me, Simon?
You just dropped out after we have to stand up.
We have to stand up and make sure that open the floodgates for free energy here in the world,
so we can get away from these petroleum-based products?
Well, you may know that by 2016, which is the sort of end, back end of this year, moving through to 2025, all auto manufacturers know that no cars will be made that carry petroleum or diesel spirits. They are already for the great change that's coming, but it won't be free energy. They're trying to use battery packs so that they can still have a monopoly. But what you've said, Ted, is absolutely correct. There is a big change coming, and the understanding of free energy will be made available to the planet in a way that the corporations cannot control. You see, if the corporations can't control the dissemination of this information, then they can't make money on it. And that is what's going to happen.
Very good.
Hey.
Now, I know this is... I'm going to let you into a secret, and that's not me being sort of trying to be clever, because I hopefully never go down that road. And I will not mention the corporation, and I will not mention the person, but there is somebody who very kindly donates a few dollars every month to me. I mean, I used to have a 9-to-5 job. I was a driving teacher, and I had to decide, what do I do? Do I carry on doing the 9-to-5 job, or do I do this? This is more important. And I survive on donations, as many of us do. And he is a director. He is a member of the board of one of the largest corporations in America. And he has told me that they know what's coming. And they, as a corporation, I won't say who it is, are trying to position themselves so they can survive the change of consciousness. Now, what I have a problem with is that all the boys at the top know exactly what's happening, but all the girls and boys on the sidewalk haven't a clue. And it's the way it's always been on this planet, and that's got to change. So many people know that the control system is going to be fundamentally altered. And I will tell you this, only 15% of your American military will shoot on you. Only 15% of your American soldiers will shoot the citizens. All of the other troops will remain in their barracks, in their camp. They will refuse that order, and they will turn against those who try to kill you. The problem you have is with some of the police officers. The police officers have had to deal with so many difficult people, so much hardship, that the police have lost, not all of the police, some of the police have lost that connection with their communities. But you know how many scouts or girl guides go and bake cookies to raise money for your local military, your veterans. The connection between the American citizenry and the Army, Navy and Air Force and the Reserve Guards are so strong that can't be broken. But that is why so many FEMA guards, so many foreign troops wearing fake American uniforms are being employed. And I ask you all to have no respect for a foreign soldier appears on your soil, whether he has a badge that says United Nations, have no respect for that. But I want you to support your homegrown military. You have a connection and will never turn on you. So when I read some of the rubbish on the internet, these are written by people that don't understand. There are generals in your army who are strongly passionate in the belief that the truth has got to come out. So, you know, you're not publicly getting the full truth. There are some crazy, crazy evil people. There are also some very good people. So please take heart from that.
My father was in the military, in the U.S. Army for 30 years. He was a very honorable and honest man. And I know there's a lot of really good people in our military, too, and I couldn't agree with you more. One quick thing. About a month ago, there was a strange little article in the local paper here in Tacoma, Tacoma News Tribune, actually, about how a battalion of Chinese soldiers were training at Fort Lewis, which is only about 15, 20 minutes from here. And it didn't make any sense to me, but is this part of this plan to bring in foreign troops to subjugate the American people? I don't think it'll work. Is that part of that, or what?
Absolutely. That is exactly what the plan is. It won't work. Because they know American soldiers will not turn on their own people, they are having to recruit people from Eastern Europe, from the old Yugoslavia, lots and lots of those, militia, foreign troops, and they will give them American uniforms. But you'll know they're not American because A, they don't look like American, and B, they won't speak English.
Interesting, interesting. We'll take one more question. Yeah, you've been raising. Go ahead. One brief question, please. You might want to step forward so we can hear you better on the audio.
When we talk about aliens and the alien influence on our civilizations,
could you step forward,
louder?
Please? Can't hear you. Please step forward.
To where?
Thank you. Let's just go ahead.
Okay. So there's always talk about U.S. or other countries, but I'm curious about Latin America and Mexico and what influence they have suffered from ET influence, and what is the negative or positive, and what are we looking forward to as far as how things are changing.
Okay, hi Simon. I don't know if you heard that or not.
Hi.
Hi my friend.
No, it dropped out. Can you just tell me?
Sure. Briefly, she's asking about what you know of...
You cut out again.
Okay. What you know about extraterrestrial influence in Mexico and Latin America, and whether it's been positive or negative.
Right. Any culture that has a sacrifice at the heart of its belief system is not positive. The so-called god of those people from the Mesopotamia region, Israel, Egypt, Iraq, Iran, that particular so-called god transferred across to the states of South America, such as the Aztecs or the Incas, the Maya. And although some of those cultures were more benign, others weren't. And if you look at the coin on a Mexico peseta, you will see that it is a bird grasping a snake. And therein is your answer, because the snake culture is a reptilian culture, and therefore the god of the Jews, and I can say that because I am Jew, so I can't be accused as being anti-Jewish, I am a Jew. The god of the Jews had children, and one of those children then went and became the god of some of the South American nations. And that's why you're looking at maybe 15th, 16th century, perhaps from the 6th century, 650 AD, right through to the 12th, 13th century, when unfortunately many of them were wiped out by explorers. So if you get chucked out from one country, you just go and set up camp in another country. So anybody who has a sacrificed part of their culture, I'm sorry, I can't go with that. That's not good.
All right, thank you. And one last question I'd love to ask you, Simon. I want to thank you so much for coming on today. Perhaps I've asked this before, but I want to to wrap up our interview with this, is that what can people do in their everyday lives to make this a better planet?
Don't sit in your armchair and say that you are a victim. Don't sit in your armchair and say, what can I do? I'm just one person. Band together with other people. Form groups. Support each other. And go out there and, in a positive way, try to show the world that fear is not a matter that we want to engage with, but we need to be positive, we need to believe in what we're doing, and that there is an alternative. So form groups, support yourself, because the internet will be taken down, Facebook will come down, Skype will come down, your cell phone will come down for about a fortnight. If you have formed groups with people, then you can support yourself, not just with supplied food or water, but just emotional support. That is the strength you need to do. You need to believe and bring other people on board. And that is that. If you can just do that, just bring one more person on board to see truth, then you've done a good job.
Well, that's the purpose of my conference, Simon, is galactic wisdom. And you've certainly helped raise the consciousness today. And is there anything, any final remarks you'd like to make to wrap up your wonderful interview today?
Well, I just want to thank everybody. What I would say to you is that, you know, you guys went into this place, you paid your money, and you listened to the speakers. Now, often we can't go to places, we have to watch on YouTube, but if you didn't go in and pay that money, there wouldn't be conferences. And the people who sit at home and never go to conferences and they just get it all for free on the internet, they wouldn't have that. And so I always want to thank people who make the effort to turn up to a conference. And that's why I always love to take questions from the audience, because the person sitting at home watching this on YouTube, they don't get the chance to ask a question. And when I do conferences, and I always want to reward people for turning up. So all I would say to you is thank you for believing in the truth. Thank you for keeping strong. We've got further to go, but you're on the right road. And just God bless you. That's really it.
Thank you so much, Simon.
Thank you.
I'm very much looking forward to interviewing you on June 24th for my radio show and June 25th for my television show.
Thank you. Take care. Good night, everybody.
Bye, Simon.
Thank you, Simon. Everyone says goodbye. And
bye, Simon.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.